Hey, everybody. This is B on Dot Paul Podcast, Stuff About Stuff. So today we're going to talk about memories, traditional memories, why people can't remember things, techniques used to help people remember things, maybe a little insight into how the brain works. Good luck with that. So, you know, memories are a mental record of people's past experiences, knowledge, and perceptions that an individual accumulates and retains over time. So the brain's way of encoding, storing, and retrieving information about events, people, places, emotions, and other aspects of their lives. Memories can play a critical role in shaping our identity, influencing our decision-making, and allowing us to learn from the past. So yeah, let's just take a minute there. People, places, events, emotions, and other aspects of our lives. Yeah, to help us in decision-making and influencing and identity, of course, and allowing us to learn from the past. You know, they always say hindsight is 20/20, and that is true. I find the human memory to be very fickle. I'm not calling out anybody. I'd call out myself. Why did I do that again and again and again? I know better. There's another emotion involved with that the memory does. Love. But typically love trumps everything. And there you have it. They're not exact replicas of the past events, but rather reconstructions based on the information stored in the brain, which is interesting. Some things I can remember when I was a boy, when I mean boy, like 5-10 years old, like it was literally yesterday. Other things are foggy and they happen yesterday, literally yesterday, you know. It's just odd the way the brain works. When you experience something, the brain processes it and encodes it and then puts it someplace. Typically, they think neurons, and then neurons fire off to synapses, and it's stored there like some kind of biological filing cabinet. Various regions of the brain, including the hippocampus, is particularly important for the formation of new memories. You'll see or hear of people that had the Groundhog Day. When I was in the hospital, in the rehab hospital, there was a young woman, I think I've talked about her before, and she would come in and very pleasant, very nice, and introduce herself. We would go through our routines. You know, we played games, card games, memory games, whatever. Then the next day, we would meet again, and it was a new day, but she didn't remember anything from the previous day. Anything. I was told, you know, when they woke her up in the mornings there in the hospital, they had to show her how to comb her hair, how to brush her teeth, how to bathe, how to get dressed, all those things that are intuitive and that you learn as a boy or as a girl, she just could not retain. And then forget about coming down talking to us knuckleheads, because, you know, it's like, in your face, I beat you in Parcheesi yesterday, won a rematch. She had no idea who we were or who any of the instructors were. It was sad. And this went on I was there for a month, almost every day for a month. I still to this day can't wrap my head around that, but apparently her hippocampus you know, took a hit. You know, it was a rehab hospital. So the process of retrieving memories is considered stored information, and bring it into consciousness. However, nobody knows how that works. Memories can be influenced by various factors, includes passage of time, emotion, personal bias, external cues. Therefore, memories are not always entirely accurate and can be subject to distortion or errors. For me, and I've heard other people say this, but I will just speak for me personally. If I smell something, if I smell a particular perfume, I immediately think of my mother, I see my mother, and I can probably, not all the time, depending on what I'm doing, because it just is one of those things, somebody walks by you and has that perfume on, and it's like, bam, I'm there. Certain cologne that I used to wear, I wore for a relationship I was in. It's funny, I found a bottle of it in the, I just moved, and in a box. It's like, oh, hey, there's that stuff I used to wear for that person. And opened it up immediately. I smelled that, and I'm back getting ready to go to the beach. We used to love to go to the beach. We used to go to the Caribbean a lot. Great memories for me. And bam. So, I just put the top back on that, and I just filed that away forever. Different types of memory, including the one I was just talking about, sensory memory, short-term memory, long-term memory. Sensory memory holds information, you know, in the form of our senses for a very brief period. While short-term memory allows for temporary storage and manipulation of information. So, you know, I'm at my job doing something and somebody's talking about something. I go, hey, yeah, I just looked at that and it's like, it's this. And okay. And then long-term memory is, I use that every day too. It's like, I remember things from when I started in IT and that I've done at other companies. That's very important for me as a consultant. It's like, well, at this other firm, they had a similar problem, and this is how we fixed it. Y'all are sort of like that, and this is how we're going to fix it. So I can extrapolate. Overall, memories are an integral part of our cognitive abilities. Well, yeah. Shaping our understanding of the world, enabling us to navigate and interact with our environment based on, you know, past experiences. I was wondering why humans can't remember certain things. The number one thing that came up in my research was encoding failure. Something that they think has something to do with the neutrons firing, and that stored memory cannot be brought back. It's not that it's gone. It's just either with age or drug abuse or some kind of trauma, which a lot of people think this, that your brain is trying to protect you because you don't need to go through that again, that encoding process fails. And then there's storage decay. Now, I'm talking about humans. I'm not talking about machines. Even if it's successfully encoded in stores, memory can fade over time if it's not accessed or reinforced. Well, yeah, I'm not going to access, you know, what I got on my, you know, ninth birthday, you know, or that little girl down the street that wouldn't kiss me behind the, you know, the tree, you know, because I've moved on. So I don't regularly access that information. But still, I can remember things when I was 10 years old. So I don't know. I think a lot of those memories are happy memories and memories of growing up, my family, my friends, you know, in that time in my life when everything seemed possible. everything was possible. And then something called interference with new or old information. Two types of interference, proactive interference. Old information interfaces with new information. And retroactive inference, when new information interferes with old information. Have no idea what they're talking about here. Interference can make it a challenge to remember specific details or events. Now, I have to stop right there and say, you know, I was just talking about the rehab hospital because I was sick. So I had a brain aneurysm. I had a stroke. And they put me in a coma for 2 weeks, you know, medically induced coma so my brain could fix itself, which it did. And they woke me up and, hello, I'm back. Lost about 2 weeks of my life, literally. Can't remember that because I was asleep, obviously. I have found that I may have this interference here, especially certain events and certain people in my life. Before that happened, I could remember these people and their actions and how I felt about those things. And now I try to think about certain events and certain people, and it's all fuzzy. It's kind of there. I ask people, or I was at a friend's house a couple of Thanksgivings ago and just yapping away about something, and he's talking about something, and I have no idea what he's talking about, but apparently I was there and I was the one who said it, and I was the one who I should have known. And he says, yeah, dude, you said that. You don't remember? And I go, no, I don't remember, Scott. And he had a weird look on his face. And I probably had a weirder look on my face. You know, I've had this memory problem. I don't think it's getting worse. It's not getting any better. You know, my sister knows my entire history, obviously, because she's my sister. I have to ask her things. And when I got out of the rehab hospital, I went and stayed with them. My sister's house, and she had objects in her house that belonged to my mother and paintings she had done that I should have known what they were, and I didn't. Nobody knows this, but I took a couple of photographs of some things in the house and copied them onto my computer, and slowly but surely I would just stare at them, and it would come to me, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh yeah, I remember my sister painting that. It's weird. These things that were in my life, my entire life, are just gone. And there are some things, I've never really said this out loud, that I just don't know. Just gone. It's not in that tip of the tongue state, you know. Retrieval failure is what it's called. Where you're trying to grasp at something. It's there. You know what it is. It's tip of the tongue. Now, this is just nothing. Unless someone says something, it may just pass through, go right by me. There's neurological conditions in aging. Of course, this was a neurological condition, a brain aneurysm, a stroke. And here's a tip. Your doctor says, take your medicine. Take your medicine. It will keep you from having a stroke. Especially for men, high blood pressure is what they call the silent killer. Everybody knows about heart attacks and all of that. But apparently, you know how men are. You know how we are. I'll just take that tomorrow. Or, oh, F it. I don't want to go down the pharmacy. You know, whatever. Whatever your excuse is, don't make it. Take your medicine every day and go see your doctor at least twice a year and get checked out. And then aging, I'm older, but I'm not that old. You know, I don't have Mr. Biden's problem. It's apparent that he part of his brain has gone bye-bye, and he's being led around, and it's just sad to watch. I watched my mother go through this. My father died of cancer, and my mother died of old age. She was, let's just call it 100. I'm not going to call it 99.5. But she lived a full life. But about the last 10 years, she had Alzheimer's. And before that, she had dementia. So when cats weren't riding on the ceiling fan, then she couldn't remember anything. And so my mom really died 10 years before her body actually gave up. Physiological factors, stress, anxiety, trauma, emotional state can impact attention encoding, retrieval process, affecting the memory performance. They say puzzles and eating a healthy diet and all of that is good for you. I don't know about the puzzle thing. I think staying active as long as you can and talking to people and being involved really, really helps. It helps everything else, so it's got to help your memory. So what are repressed memories? A lot of people talk about this. You hear about it. In certain circles, repressed memories, they pop up. There have been movies made about this where people remember, oh, wow, did the neighbor really do that? And then you find out the neighbor is a Nazi. Yes, the neighbor really did that. And it's been repressed, and then all that comes flooding back. There's one event I cannot remember in my life. For a long time, I wanted to remember it. I thought it was important to remember it, to understand that, and then to move on from it. But to this day, I can't. This is before my stroke. And I've heard all kind of people say all kind of things about it. Well, that's your brain protecting you, or leave it alone, let it go, it will pass. And I've learned to do that. I think it's a repressed memory. I think it's being repressed because of what happened. And it can just stay there. I don't need to know. I have responsibility for that. I acknowledge it. So I'll just let that go. The concept suggests that individuals may experience traumatic events or distressing experiences that are too overwhelming to process. As a defense mechanism, the mind may repress these memories, preventing them from entering conscious awareness. This repression is believed to protect the individual from the emotional pain associated with the memories. I can see that working. And thank you, brain. Appreciate it. I went to a therapist about this, and they were talking to me about it, and they go, there are techniques, and we briefly got on that. And so, if it comes to me, it comes to me. If it doesn't, it doesn't. One of the things they pointed out, if it comes to you, you're going to have that forever. You have already acknowledged that in your life. And you may not be able to move on from that, or that may not only become a memory, that you have, it may become a memory that you relive over and over and over. So, we decided we're going to move on to my next problem. Excuse me, I'm just laughing at myself. Let me take a glass of drink of water here. Okay, that water is way too cold. You know, one of the key challenges of repressed memory is the potential for them being influenced or distorted. And I was worried about the influence part more by me influencing them with the guilt that I felt or my wanting to right the wrong that I felt, or maybe just be distorted. Do I even believe this? Is this real? Some researchers suggest the process of memory retrieval can be susceptible to suggestion, leading individuals to develop false memories or confabulations, lies. Therefore, caution must be exercised when dealing with repressed memories, and it is crucial to employ regular scientific methods to evaluate their authenticity. Well, yeah, I was hinting at hypnosis earlier, and we talked about that, and I'm not down with that. I know a lot of people. I had a guy when I was working at Microsoft, his wife was a therapist, and that's one of the things she did. And I was just, nope, not doing that. Don't want to know about that. You know, I just, no. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, there are certain forms of psychotherapy that are subject to controversy. Guided imagery, hypnosis, other techniques that recover repressed memories. And it's raised concerns about creation of false memories. So I just want to stay away from that. I had already been through enough to then go, am I really remembering this, or I don't need to have that, you know, in my life or in my brain. You know, can repressed memories be retrieved? You know, that's a complex and controversial within the field of psychology. I won't even try to make sense of that. I'm telling you, as a patient, I would pick for myself, no, leave it alone. Let it happen. You know, there's a belief in retrieval. Some professionals believe repressed memories can be retrieved through hypnosis and imagery and age regression. No, not doing that. You can remember anything. That to me sounds like bunk, and it does not sound like science. I do not want any part of that for me personally. And critics say, you know, repressed memory retrieval is due through suggestion. The person taking you into hypnosis or imagery, they already know your story, and they can build that for you and create this false memory, and your mind fill in the rest. And I just don't, again, personally, don't want that in my life. There's lack of scientific consensus, so that right there, I'm out. Controversial cases, I don't. There were some listed. I didn't read any of that. You know, there's a completely separate part of childhood sexual abuse. I don't know anything about that. I don't want to know anything about that. I don't need that. What I happened to me is my fault and my fault alone. So if it comes to me, I'll just go, oh, damn, there it is. So memory distortion, you know, like traumatic memories, like what I'm talking about, can distort and alter over time. And, you know, it's been 6.5 years now for me. And if something pops up later today, you know, you know, I'm going to be scratching my head. Is that real? did that really happen? And, okay, well, that's not right. Or, you know, I'll psychoanalyze the hell out of myself. But at least I'll have that one little piece, and then I'll have to put that into the puzzle and then put the puzzle away again. But 6.5 years, I've learned to live with it and take it for what it is. It's my story. It's what happened. And I can't really do anything about it. You know, they say individual differences, memory process different between every individual. So what's right for me and has happened for me may not hold for another person. And then your personal experiences, psychological factors, cultural influences can shape formation and retrieval. So I guess summing it all up, you know, repressed memories is a contentious topic. Some professionals and individuals believe in the existence and potential retrieval. Others question their validity and highlight the risk of memory distortion. I'm in that camp. And memory research is needed to gain clear understanding of repressed memories and retrieval within a scientific, rigorous framework. Good luck figuring out the human brain. You know, I really am not saying that to be a smartass, but I know a lot of people think they have figured certain things out, and they haven't. These are all guesses. They don't call it practicing medicine for nothing. Some people are pretty good at it, but I don't think, you know, for me, the individual, I think a lot of these things that a lot of people think are carved in stone are not. They are theories, best guesses, and so I'll leave it at that. I don't want to anger too many people because I probably already have. So I was interested in dreams, memories. You know, a lot of people will have deja vu. And it's like, oh, yeah, I had deja vu. And a lot of people say, well, that was a dream you had that you're just remembering now. Well, a lot of people say that dreams are not representations of memories. Anyway, recalling specific event that from a past, you know, dreams are a mismatch of sensory, perceptual, emotional, narrative elements. I have a dream of, you know, being lost, looking for something, and then I'm on the beach, and then after that, I'm in a herd of cats. It's weird. I don't know. And none of that has anything to do with anything. And then I wake up, and when I was younger, I used to write my dreams down, thinking that that was something, because somebody said you should do that. So I did. Because I was young and I believe stuff like that. And I remember them. And by the time I've had my cup of coffee and I'm on my first conference call of the day, I have no, you can ask me, hey, what did you dream about last night? I don't know. But, you know, an hour earlier, I was enmeshed in it. I was in it. You know, it was happening. I was all about it, especially that beach part. Just saying. You know, dreams often incorporate fragments of memories. But, you know, you have to be, well, they say that those thoughts in the individual has to be awake. I don't understand what that means. Let's see. Let me read this, what AI said. Dreams often incorporate fragments of memories, experiences, emotions, and thoughts that the individual has encountered while awake. Okay, those elements could be woven together in unpredictable and imaginable ways, like the, you know, beach herd of cats thing. Dreams can draw upon recent events, personal concerns, daily activities, even long-term memories to create the dream content. You know, some dreams, you know, are about people, some about places, same things about the past. Sometimes I dream about my family in the past, especially my mother and father. Now that they're gone, I have symbolic dreams of my mother and my father. And there, it's just kind of like, wow, I wake up. I like it because I wake up and I feel, this is going to sound weird, refreshed, energized. You know, like when you used to go to your parents' house, you would see your mom and dad on the porch and you would pull up and walk up to the porch and your dad would shake your hand and your mom would hug you. That's the way I feel when I have those dreams. The exact function and purpose of dreams is fully not understood by researchers. Various theories propose that dreams serve a function, such as memory consolidation or emotional processing, problem solving, and creativity. However, the precise mechanism through which these processes occur during dreaming are still subject of scientific investigation. You know, I think, you know, we're full of stimulus all day long and we process things. This is my opinion. So you may want to write this down because it's, you know, it's fully vetted by me. I think that dreams are, you go to sleep and you go into REM, rapid eye movement, because your brain is like, now your brain's like, wait a minute, I couldn't take all that in. I stored all this stuff up. Now we're going to play it back. And it plays back these things in no particular order and doesn't mean anything, you know, unless it's a hot chick. And because those dreams mean something. That just made a joke. That's what I think. I think it's your brain. You know, you get bombarded with stuff every day, but even before all this technology and all this nonsense, you know, think about being a caveman and being chased by a woolly mammoth. Yeah, I bet your brain's like working overtime. Then you go to sleep in the cave and everything's cool, but now you're dreaming about pterodactyls, you know, because the brain was probably thinking that, but you couldn't process it. So now you're going to dream about it. That's what I think. So that was my tangent on dreams. You know, we talked about memory distortion a little bit earlier. It's a phenomenon where our memories become altered, modified, inaccurate, reconstructed over time. It involves changing content, details, interpretations of our location, of the people involved, and it leads to discrepancies between the original event and subsequent memory of it. Memory distortion can occur for various reasons and is influenced by numerous cognitive and psychological factors. Some of the key factors are, well, what are they, B? First one is reconstruction. Memory is not perfect. It's not a verbatim record of past events. When we recall a memory, we reconstruct it based on fragments of information stored in our brain. During the retrieval process, we may fill in the gaps with plausible or expedited details, drawing upon our knowledge, benefits, and schemes. So my schemes are devious, so look out, memories. this reconstruction process can introduce errors and distortion into the memory. Water break, excuse me. I usually take these water breaks when I'm interviewing someone and they're talking and I can go on mute and I can drink water. So, pardon me on these monologues. So the exceptions are, you know, mental framework or structures that organize our knowledge. These schemas, which in IT we have schemas. So I guess I've mispronounced that earlier, beliefs and schemas, not scams. Oh, sorry. Oh, see, so my brain's doing, it's malfunctioning. Help us and these things help us interpret it and make sense of new information. However, these schemas can also influence how we encode, store, and retrieve memories. Our perplexing schemas can shape our memory by selecting, including, or excluding details that align with our expectations, leading to distortion. Aha. Okay. Misinformation effect. The misinformation effect occurs when exposure to misleading or incorrect information after an event can alter our memory of that event. For example, if we are provided with inaccurate details or suggestions about an event, it can influence our subsequent recall, leading to distortion or false memories. This effect has been extensively studied, and eyewitness testimony has important implications for the reliability. Why can I talk today? Of memory. So eyewitness, you know, where they say, oh, I have an eyewitness. And 9 times out of 10, the eyewitness memory is wrong. This is why I said earlier, you're not hypnotizing me. You're not going to give me any kind of imagery to bring something back that my brain is protecting me from, because you're going to mess with it, not intentionally, but just through your technique. And we're going to call it good. And I'm going to think that, you know, giraffes, you know, raised me in Africa until I was 3 years old, or whatever the weird thing that you introduced into my mind. And I know how fertile my imagination is, and we don't want that. Okay, headset adjustment. Let's see. Source monitoring and confabulation, or lying. Memory distortion can involve difficulties in accurately attributing the source of a memory. Sometimes we may mistakenly attribute a memory to a different source or context, leading to misrepresentation of the original event. Confabulation is a specific type of memory distortion characterized by the production of fabricated or distorted information that is believed to be true. Confabulations can occur due to memory deficits, gaps, or attempts to fill in missing information. Influence of emotion and stress. Well, yeah, stress can make you remember things different, and emotional definitely mess you up. Intense emotions can enhance certain aspects of memory while impairing others, leading to bias and distortions. Highly emotional or traumatic events can also be susceptible to memory fragmentation or disassociation, where memory gaps or inconsistency may arise. Disassociation, that does not sound good. Forgetting and decay. Memory distortion can also result from forgetting or decay over time. You know, memories can become less accurate or vivid as time passes, and retrieval of older memories can be susceptible to distortion or loss of specific details. Okay, yeah. I know for me, certain memories, you know, they're written in stone. I remember exactly them. The first time I saw my wife, so I've had several wives, okay, three. I'm good at everything except being a husband. I had a girlfriend tell me once, props out to G, you're a better boyfriend, and we're not getting married. She's right, I'm a better boyfriend. The whole husband thing is beyond me. Apparently, I suck at it. I wouldn't have three ex-wives. But I remember seeing my first wife, I remember where I was sitting, what I was looking at, what the event was, and what she was wearing. And obviously, I remember who she was. She became my childhood sweetheart and my, you know, high school sweetheart. And we got married. And we still talk. Yes, I still talk to my exes. A lot of people don't like that or don't understand it. And I don't really understand it. But apparently, again, people can talk to me, but they just don't get married to me. Want to have a good time, want to ride motorcycles, want to, you know, drink a beer on the patio. I'm your guy, but yeah, we're not getting married. So I have to talk about the stroke in ending here. I talked about this in a podcast, early on. I think I did that podcast, 2022 Penguins. I think it's called Penguins, where I saw penguins. And I won't go into the entire story now, but I'll give you the cliff notes. So in a stroke, I had the stroke. They put me in a morphine coma. And you're not sleeping. And a lot of people say, oh, you had a morphine dream. You don't sleep. There's no REM. Your brain does nothing but what it's supposed to do, repair what's broken. And in my case, it was a blood vessel in my brain was broken. And it built a little on-ramp around it and then reconnected, and then it repaired that one. So I have the original one, and then I have this other one. So that part of my brain is double smart now. But back to the penguins. And one day I just looked over to my left, and there was a big penguin standing there. I was like, yo. And then I looked down this hallway, like, okay. And then this penguin, okay. And then another day, looked over, and penguin standing there. And there are two others with him. There's a medium and then a smaller one. Then I looked down the hallway. The hallway had turned into, you ever seen those old railroad tunnels? Brick, they're typically brick. And all right, now I looked over to the right. Oh, there's the brick wall. And I looked over the penguin, and you know, he just kind of looked up at me. I was like, all right. Then the third day, looked over, there's the penguin, the other two, and now I see a light at the end of this tunnel. Look, everybody always says, I see a light. And I felt his flipper not touching me, but the presence behind me. And I looked over, and then I looked up, and in that instance, we're at the end of the tunnel and the light. And the next thing is the next day, the next hour, whatever it was, I'm outside the tunnel, and I look back, and the penguins are standing there. They're inside the tunnel, three of them. And I was like, come on, bro, come on. And I turned and saw my sister and heard her voice. That happened. And this is why I think it happened. I have never felt so much love in my entire life. When I turned left and saw the penguins, the penguin the first time, I was just like, yeah, this is great. And I've been loved in my life. Not only by the ex-wives, many friends, parents, strangers, friendships, cats, dogs, a few fish. And this was nothing like that. I wanted to stay there. Like, you know, I'm hanging here. I'm happy here. Nothing hurts. I'm content. It was the best. And I had this feeling that if I would have continued to turn my head and look behind me, I would have saw the penguins handler. I don't want to say master because everybody get mad at me for using that word, but handler, master, arbiter. But I got that feeling. I also got the feeling when I was looking at the penguin, typically the second time, because there's three of them now, and I was scanning all of them, that I wasn't supposed to look back. It wasn't time to look back, maybe. So that happened to me. I've told this to many people. I don't think this is a part of medication. I think it was God. And it wasn't my time to go. I believe that. I've always been a believer. I came out of that. And I told my brother-in-law the entire story on our way back. I live in Dallas, and I was in the hospital in Dallas, and we drove back to Tyler, Texas, where my sister and brother-in-law live, for me to stay with them. And I told him the entire story. He's just staring at me, and I don't know if he thought I was insane or I was now addicted to morphine, or we need to stop, you know, stop at Bucky's and, you know, get a burger or what. And then I told my sister about it later on, and she believes me. I think most people do believe me. I've had one person tell me that it was a morphine dream. I've had several therapists tell me it was real, and it was not a dream or a memory. It was an actual event, and I was somewhere between here and there. And the drugs may have allowed my whatever is in us to relax and to accept the supernatural. So that's how I'll end. I hope I didn't freak anybody out talking about memories today or any of my far-fetched concepts or how I feel about things. Again, with all of these monologues I do, I hope that someone listening to this and had similar or questions got something out of this. So until next time, this is B on Dot Paul Podcast, Stuff About Stuff. And remember, accelerate with confidence.